You know what I'm down with?
Starting
I'm down
this
with
podcast.
Doing a show.
Okay. Let's do that. Record on go. 3, 2. Oh, we should do it like this. Bronze, silver, gold, go. Welcome to episode 378 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and a little bit of Olympics across all Windows platforms.
Yeah, Olympics. Just a little bit of, well, maybe more. I don't know. We'll see. Everything is Olympic themed this week, right?
Absolutely.
So we only got one listener feedback this week. So, and this was sent in to us via email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So since there's only one, does that mean that PJ automatically gets the gold in listener feedback?
Sure. There's only one award. All right. Well, PJ says, hey guys, keep up the good work. I'm enjoying your podcast on Windows Phone to Android migration. I didn't hear any mention of an Xbox TV UWP app for Windows, though. The Xbox One console Windows update was a little painful. I had to reauthenticate on some apps like Netflix and Xbox Live, and I didn't expect that. Do you want to address any of that before we go on?
When he says Xbox TV UWP, I guess I'm not exactly sure what he means there. Well, what do you think he means?
Well, would there be a UWP, in other words, an Xbox TV app that works across platforms, I suppose.
But does TV mean like the One Guide?
That I don't know. But yeah, I don't know.
That would be okay, especially with the way that the One Guide is including, you know, other sources like movies and TV app and Netflix and things like that. That would be cool. I like that idea. Good idea, PJ. That would be cool to see.
All right. Well, he has a question, and he says, from the choices below, what's the best controller to use for Windows 10 and 7 PCs and Xbox One consoles? Also, Windows Phone 10, you know, just to throw that in too. I had strange issues with a wired Xbox One controller on a Windows 7 PC, and I was thinking that buying new colorful controllers might save a few dollars on a wireless dongle. I use Steam on Windows 10 and 7 and a UWP on Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. Ooh, he's totally up to date. And an Xbox One console. So he wants to choose between either the wired Xbox 360 controller, the wired Xbox One controller connected via USB to a PC, the new Xbox One controller through Bluetooth, or the original Xbox One controller with the wireless dongle. He says, thanks for your time. I'm still on Windows Media Center, phone, etc.
All right. So this is actually a very appropriately timed question. I'm actually going to just jump into one of our stories from the gaming section and just cover it now, because it absolutely perfectly, well, maybe not perfectly answers his question, but Ars Technica had a really interesting story this week called Xbox One Controllers and Windows 10 PCs. It's all a mess right now. It seems as though the anniversary update of Windows 10 has made things more complicated across the board, and that the new Xbox One S controllers, the ones that have Bluetooth, also aren't working exactly as expected. So I guess first let's dig into what's going on. The first thing is the anniversary update seems to have messed up Xbox One controllers across the board. I haven't tested this yet because my main PC at home, I still haven't done the upgrade to Windows 10 anniversary yet because I wasn't home over the weekend. So I don't have any experience with this yet on anniversary version. But what Ars Technica is saying is that whether you're using an Xbox One controller wired via the micro USB cable, using the Xbox One wireless adapter that's USB, or Bluetooth, things are going wrong. Like basically, a lot of games just aren't recognizing it. Steam Big Picture Mode is treating a single controller as two controllers. Like, there's just lots of issues right now, apparently. What I'm not sure of is if this is across the board for everybody, because it seems like they would have caught this, but it sounds bad. Now, Microsoft has said they're working on these things. They plan to have fixes out for these soon. Well, they haven't actually even said soon, but just that they're working on it and that there will be updates. For all I know, those updates could be out like today. They could be out by the time you're hearing this. Microsoft tries to go quickly on things like this once they've acknowledged a problem. But there's also a problem with the Bluetooth version. With Bluetooth, right now, their website says that you can only pair one Bluetooth controller to a PC at a time, which seems ridiculous. I don't know why that would be a limitation. Now, when Ars Technica reached out to Microsoft, Microsoft said, well, actually, you can connect at least two. But their own support page says that it only supports one. So I guess we'll have to wait and see on an update for that. Another problem with that is you can't actually connect it via Bluetooth until you've done a firmware update to the controller. Now, it doesn't say that anywhere in the documentation when you buy these things. It doesn't say that when you try to pair it to your computer. It just doesn't pair, and you don't know why. Geez. So to fix it, you have to go to the store and install the Xbox Accessories app, and then it'll allow you to update the firmware, which I think in that case would probably need to be done via a micro USB cable, and then you can pair it via Bluetooth. So right now on Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, it's kind of a mess. I think it's all going to get fixed fairly soon, but it's kind of a mess right now. So going back to his original question, if you want to use an Xbox 360 controller, that's probably fine for Windows 10 and Windows 7. But he also mentioned Xbox One wouldn't work there. And he also mentioned Windows 10 Mobile. Pretty sure it won't work there either. Microsoft has only said that the Xbox One controllers would work with Windows 10 Mobile. So I think you're going to need to go the Xbox One route in terms of an Xbox One controller for this to work on all of those things. But I think you could still end up with issues with Windows 7, because the new controller, the Bluetooth one, I think they've said will only work with Windows 10.
Oh, come on.
But my question is, why do you still have a Windows 7 machine?
Oh, well, like, he said he's a Windows Media Center user, so maybe he also uses that for some gaming on the TV.
Okay. That's a fair reason. But I guess my thought then is, if you need one for a Windows 7 PC and it's a separate machine, like, than your Windows 10 machine, obviously, and obviously it's separate from your Xbox One, you might just want to use a 360 controller on that machine anyway. And here's the reason. For you to use that Xbox One controller on all of those other things, you're always going to have to be repairing it. Like, if you use it on your Windows 10 machine via Bluetooth, and then you want to pair it to your Windows 7 machine, if that even worked, which I don't think it will, you'd have to repair it again and have to be repairing and repairing and repairing as you switch back and forth between all of these things. On the other hand, a 360 controller is dirt cheap at this point. So maybe just get yourself a 360 controller for the Windows 7 machine. Maybe wait a little bit longer. You know, I'm thinking it shouldn't be more than, you know, a couple of weeks, hopefully not more than a few weeks, for the rest of these Xbox One on Windows 10 Anniversary Edition updates to be released. And hopefully you'll be golden once all of that stuff is out. So you could still get yourself a pretty fancy looking one from the Xbox Design Lab and use that on everything but your Windows 7 PC. I think that might be the way to go. And I'm guessing that he already has an Xbox 360 controller. Because if he's a gamer, which he obviously is, and he's been a gamer for a while, he was probably using a 360 controller in the past. So that might not cost you anything.
Phew.
One other thing that I wanted to hit on here. Today, I got my hands, my physical hands, on a physical Xbox One S controller.
What, did you go out shopping today?
No, a coworker bought one and he brought it in. It is a very nice controller. I've been considering getting one of these Xbox Design Lab controllers, and this kind of sold me on it. Like the textured grip on the back feels really good. It's not as nice as like the rubberized grip on the back of the Elite controller, but it's still pretty good. It's definitely going to give you more grip on the controller, and the thumbsticks feel really good. Like, especially if you're still using a day one edition Xbox One controller, heck, if you are, the thumbsticks probably don't even work correctly anymore. Like, mine is a little janky. And going from that controller to this new one, it is miles better. So if you're thinking of getting a controller, but maybe not the new console, because maybe your old one is getting worn out, or you just want a Bluetooth one, yeah, the Xbox One S controller is really nice. And now I haven't actually used it. He didn't bring in the Xbox, and I didn't hook it up to the Xbox that we have at work, but it sure felt really, really good.
Nice. All right. Well, PJ, thanks for your feedback and questions. Again, you can send us your own feedback at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can leave us a voice message by recording one and attaching it to an email sent to that same address. Let's dive into our discussion topics. And we have some video news up front. Josh, I have great news. You know, all that confusion we've been having over what's free in Hulu and what's not free in Hulu?
They've come up with a way to make it clear as to what's not free?
They have, by eliminating everything that's free.
That's one way to do it, I suppose.
You know, the more that I think about this, as much as it seems like a bad thing, I actually think this makes a lot of sense. The free service, with the exception of sometimes allowing you to view content on the web that wasn't licensed to view on devices that you paid to use Hulu on, and so just adding confusion, actually just did in fact create a whole lot of confusion. So I think by getting rid of this, they're really streamlining their offering and making it clear that Hulu is Hulu is Hulu. The content is the same everywhere, and the only difference is whether you're watching commercials or not. And so it's either $8 roughly or $12 roughly if you want to see or not see commercials respectively. This makes sense to me.
It does make sense to me. Like, I mean, they really have been a competitor to Netflix and Amazon Prime Video for a while. I mean, the people who are really heavily using Hulu are paying for it so that they can use it on their TV, basically, and their mobile devices. So this does clear up a ton of confusion. The only thing left that's kind of confusing and befuddling is if you're paying that $12 for the commercial-free version, there's still some content that has commercials, right?
Yeah, but it's really limited. The only commercial that you get is a pre-roll commercial, and it's one commercial. Oh. So it's not bad at all. It's not interrupting watching the show. You don't have commercial breaks or anything. It's nothing like the regular commercial experience where you have at least two, sometimes four or five breaks, depending on the length of the show. And then you could have anywhere from two to five commercials in each of those breaks.
Okay, so if I'm a cheapskate and I only want free stuff, where do I go to watch that free stuff now?
Well, so there's more good news, unless you're watching content on your Xbox. So what it seems like a really weird arrangement, Yahoo has somehow teamed with Hulu to take over the free streaming content. So if you want to watch the commercially supported free TV, which basically includes the last five episodes of most TV shows from ABC, NBC, Fox, and some of the affiliate stations, not affiliates, some of their associated stations like CW and things like that, then you can go to Yahoo View, which is a new service from Yahoo, not to be confused with Yahoo Screen, which is somehow different. And Yahoo View will allow you to watch these episodes at no cost. And they're going to have web and mobile apps. And I believe there is some discussion of big screen apps, just like they have with Yahoo Screen. But again, as of right now, they're not the same. Now, here's the thing. There are no apps for Xbox or PC at this point, and they're not talking about any.
Well, doesn't that kind of make sense? Because the stuff that was free on Hulu, you could basically only watch in a web browser. Like, you couldn't install the Hulu app on your Xbox One and watch the free content.
Yeah, I guess from the perspective of looking at this as something related to Hulu, it makes sense. But if you look at it as something related to Yahoo, where Yahoo already has the Yahoo Screen app that does include some TV content and some even original programming, that is available on big screen, including the Xbox 360 and TiVo.
Hmm. I didn't realize that some of that stuff was already on big screen places. So, yeah, I mean, like, I make the argument that it makes sense in terms of the old Hulu model, but I think the short version of what you're really trying to say there is it doesn't make sense from the I just want to watch the latest episode of Quantico model.
Right. Right.
On my TV.
And so to do that, you're going to have to go to the web somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's hoping that we see some nice apps from Yahoo for Yahoo View, and definitely hoping that they bring one to the Xbox One.
I hope so too. Hey, Josh.
Yeah.
What do you do when you really like a show that you download from iTunes?
When I download from iTunes? Well, if I did download things from iTunes and I really, really like them, I would rate it, of course. And if I really, really liked it, I would leave a review so that everyone knew just what I liked about it.
All right. Now, what do you do if you really, really like a show that you don't download from iTunes?
Well, I guess if it's a podcast, I would still go to iTunes because that's the place where you really need to leave ratings and reviews for podcasts, because that's the one true internet source of podcast.
Unfortunately, it kind of is. And so this is our call to action for you, our listeners. If you enjoy listening to the show, do it. Just suck it up and go to iTunes. I know it's terrible. But if you have a moment to leave us a rating or a review, it would be so helpful. We'd greatly appreciate it.
All right. So let's get on to a little bit of, you know, I want to call this awkward audio news. So the anniversary update came to Windows 10 PCs and to the Xbox One this month, and it brought on the Xbox One, it finally gave us background music playback, and the world rejoiced for a few moments. And then they went back to complaining because it only really works for Groove Music and for maybe some other UWPs that may or may not support it, like Pandora. But what if you don't use Groove Music for your music? What if I've just got a big hard drive full of MP3s? Because some people still do that, especially the people listening to this show. Well, you were kind of sunk. You had to use Groove until now, because a new app has been released to the Xbox One App Store. And if you're going to ask, well, how did that happen? It was a Microsoft employee who wrote this app. So
I was going to ask that.
To get his stuff out there. This app is called Simple Background Music Player.
Wow. That I wonder what that does.
Yeah. So it allows you to, you know, I can't come up with something ridiculous.
Play music in the background simply?
Exactly. So basically the idea is you take all your music, you throw it in an Xbox music folder on your thumb drive or on an external USB drive, you plug it in, and this app will be able to see all of that music and allow you to play all of that music. Now, it's not just MP3s. It's MP3s, WMAs for our big Windows fans out there, FLAC for our audio files out there, and I put that in air quotes, M4A for our iTunes fans out there.
Oh, come on.
And MP4. Well, where else are you getting M4A?
M4A is just like, you know, you can name any MP4 audio file M4A.
Sure, but am I getting MP4 files? MP3. If I buy music from Amazon Music, it comes down as an MP3.
Is that true on Google Music too?
Who buys music from Google Music?
I do.
I guess
James Montemagno does.
He absolutely does. You know, and you know, I joke about Google Music, but I'm also not entirely sure what format it comes down in if you buy it from Microsoft's music store.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's funny because in the chat, as we're talking about MP3, Sola Sweet is saying, if you're still using MP3s, there's no hope for you. But the reality is that if you're buying music of any form in digital stores, you probably are still buying MP3s.
And there's nothing wrong with that as long as they're high bitrate. I disagree with Sola Sweet. So this will work for pretty much all of that. It may not have the greatest name, and it may be kind of dumb that you have to put it in a specially named folder, but hey, at least you've got an option now.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool.
And they keep releasing updates to it. Like they've released another update just in the last couple of days that's added support for 11 more languages. So you've got options, and that's the good news there.
Very nice.
So sticking with the audio news, we've also got another update for Groove on Windows 10, PCs, and mobile. This is kind of a cool update. So there's basically three things that they've added here. The first two are enhancements to the Your Groove playlist. And if you don't remember, the Your Groove playlist is when it catalogs your music and then puts all of your music collection into interesting playlist. So for example, like they've got one that's like your all-time top plays or your heavy rotation, or I'm just looking through some of mine. This must be from Jen's music, expressive country or forgotten favorites or adult alternative. So it just takes all of your music and it puts them into fun little playlist. It'll also, if you have an Xbox One Music Pass, will sprinkle in some songs that you don't own, but that you could listen to via your Groove. Did I say Xbox One there? Your Groove. If they'd stop changing the name, I wouldn't mess it up on the podcast. Your Groove Music Pass subscription. So that's Your Groove. What they've done is you can now thumbs up and thumbs down a playlist. If you hate it, thumbs down it, and theoretically you won't see it anymore.
Did you really just verb thumbs up?
I did. You can thumbs up it, man. The other option for your Groove playlist is maybe you like most of the playlist, but there's a couple of songs that you don't like. Well, you can't thumbs down them. I'm doing it intentionally now. Instead, they've added an option called mute this song. So you click on that song or tap, I guess, if it's on your phone. And then in the bottom command bar of the app, will be an option that says mute this song, and it won't be played in that playlist anymore. So two very nice enhancements to your Groove playlist.
Yeah, I like that. I have long, long, long wished for some feature in pretty much any music service I listen to, Amazon, Pandora, Spotify, for a never, ever, ever play this song again option.
Yeah, that would be really nice. Yeah, across the board. What would be really cool is if there was one site that you could go to and say, these are the songs that I never want to hear. And all of those services, no matter what service you're using, read that database and was like, Richard Gunther never wants to hear Rick Astley again.
And oh, that's so it's just not really true, though.
So there's those two features for your Groove. And then the last feature that they've added is that through Groove Music, for music in your collection, you can now, edit your own metadata of your own tracks. So I guess
very nice.
I guess that's better than using Windows Explorer.
Well, I think the alternative was you had to use the File Explorer, or you still had to use the Media Player app that still exists. It's still there.
Yep. I still use it for listening to this show.
That's frightening.
Yeah. So that's good to see. Obviously, you can't use it for Groove Music songs because they ain't yours. So you can't edit them. They come from the cloud. All right. That's it for our audio news, Richard. Let's move on to some gaming news. And the first is kind of a surprising story here. The 2 terabyte Xbox One S, it's not like a thing that's long destined for this world. It's sold out across most of the planet. And it doesn't sound like it's coming back. At least the white 2 terabyte version that we got on August 2nd.
Surprise! We only made so many. They're gone. Sorry.
Yeah, this is really weird.
It's
really weird. So the 500 gig and the 1 terabyte versions aren't coming out until August 23rd. The 2 terabyte one is now basically sold out everywhere, except for maybe Microsoft stores, because there aren't very many of them. And people don't really go to them very often. So you're now waiting, you know, if you were just like, oh, I just need to wait until my next paycheck or something like that to finish saving your pennies. Well, now you're sunk. You can't get one. If you want a 2 terabyte one, you're going to have to wait until, I want to say it's mid-September that we said, for the Gears of War 4 specially designed Xbox One S. But maybe you don't want that one because it looks insane. Like, I mean, it's cool looking, but I think most people probably don't want, you know, an Xbox One that looks like it's been destroyed by dinosaurs and covered in blood all over their living room. So, plus that one's more expensive. I think that one is $450. So this kind of stinks. Now, I don't think it's actually the end of 2 terabyte Xbox Ones. I think it's probably the end of this specific white launch edition one. But if there's one thing we've learned about Xbox One consoles, it's that every 10 seconds, it seems, they're launching a new Xbox bundle. So I would imagine, you know, we'll get this Gears of War 4 bundle, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's another bundle later this fall that includes a 2 terabyte Xbox One. But for me, I say, don't bother getting the bigger ones. Go for the smaller one. It costs you less money up front. And then if you run out of space, and if you're a gamer, you eventually will run out of space, unless you're cool with just uninstalling the games that you're not playing and reinstalling them again at a later point. If you need to have your entire collection available all of the time, then frankly, I think it's a better option to just buy an external hard drive and plug it into your Xbox One that way. There are plenty that work without extra power. So it's just one little tiny hard drive with one wire to your Xbox, and that's it. And it works really well. If your machine freaks out and formats itself or something, all of your games are still there. You're not going to have to download them again because they're on external storage. A lot of times the external storage is actually faster than the internal storage. I frankly see no reason to buy the bigger Xbox Ones. Oh yeah, and typically you can get a whole lot more storage from an external drive for a lot less money than what these bigger storage capacity options cost you.
I guess my only thought would be, are you using up a precious USB port with external storage? What else do you need USB ports for? Do you need them for charging? Possibly. Do you need them for, like if you have the Kinect and you have an adapter for that? How many ports are on this thing? There are only two, right?
I think there's two on the back and one on the front.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, maybe everybody isn't obsessive like I am, but I don't want anything sticking out of the one in the front.
Well, I think you're only going to use the one in the front if you're like charging your
controller. That would work.
And then in the back, you've got one for the Kinect and one for the hard drive.
Okay. All right. Yep.
And since apparently not very many people want to hook up a Kinect to their Xbox One, that's probably not going to be as much of an issue for most people.
Right.
But it is absolutely something worth considering. If you've got a Kinect and you've got the, you know, maybe you've got the USB TV tuner.
Oh, right. There's that too.
There's two of your USB ports gone. And now you're left with just the one on the front. And yeah, you probably don't want a hard drive plugged into the one on the front if you care about how it all looks. So those are things to consider, I suppose. But in most cases, I think you're better off just buying that external drive.
I have one.
You do, for all the games that you don't play.
Exactly. I download them. Speaking of which,
you can get some games cheaper this week. We've got this week's deals with gold. And, you know, frequently the deals with gold sale also partners up with some publisher. This week it's Capcom. Capcom makes a lot of really cool games. The ones that I would spotlight, I guess first off, the one that isn't Capcom, that would be NBA 2K16. It's down to $20. This game has been on sale a lot lately. And I'm going to guess there's a new one about to come out, because while I don't actually know when the NBA games come out, since I don't play them, the NBA season starts at about the same time as the NHL season, and NHL 17 comes out on September 13th. So we're only about a month away from potentially the next version. So if you care about that, maybe you want to wait. If you don't, hey, $20 for what's currently the best basketball game available. Now, on to most of the rest of the Capcom stuff. Mega Man Legacy Collection, that's the first six Mega Man games. It's down to $9. If you love Mega Man, or you just love really, 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 really hard games, Mega Man, $9. Or if you really wanted Mighty No. 9 to be awesome and it wasn't, here, Mega Man, do that. They've also got what seems like 400 or so Resident Evil games all for sale. Also, DMC Devil May Cry Definitive Edition for just under $10 also. And Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 is half price right now. That's $30, which sounds good, except I've heard rumors that this game is coming to EA Access very soon. You can buy an entire year of EA Access for the same price as this one game, and you get access to all of the games that are in the vault. So that's all of the previous year's sports games, you know, some of the old Battlefield games, Unravel, lots and lots and lots of EA games included in your subscription to EA Access, which is either $5 a month or $30 for the year. If you really want Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, I would just wait a few weeks to see if it comes to EA Access.
I actually really want to play that. So I have to ask you, and I don't know, of all the times that you've talked about this, I don't know if you've ever mentioned, do you subscribe to EA Access?
I don't, but I'm actually thinking about it. I don't, because a lot of the games that EA publishes, I'm actually not really that into. So it doesn't make that much sense for me, with the exception of like NHL. And NHL, by Christmas, is usually on mega sale, like $20 or less by Christmas. Right. So that's usually the kind of mindset that I'm in there. Although I'm actually considering paying for 1 month of EA Access, because I loved the heck out of NHL 17 beta that I talked about on last week's show. And so what I'm thinking, so what I'm thinking of doing is buy 1 month of EA Access for $5. That gets me access to NHL 16, which has the game mode that I really loved playing. I can play it all the way up until NHL 17 comes out. And if you're an EA Access member, you also get 10% off of games. So basically, that's $6 off of the next version of the game. I would have just spent $5 for the 1 month subscription. That basically means that I got to play a version of the game for a month and then $1 off of the next version if I decide to buy it when it comes out. So I'm actually considering it. So I'm not a big user of EA Access, but I think for most people, it really does make a ton of sense, especially if you're really into the EA Sports games.
Yep, that makes sense.
All right, Richard, we've got one more piece of industry news here. And this is actually, I could have put this in the gaming section because you'll see in a moment. But the news here is Vizio has announced that they're releasing a firmware update for their 2016 models in the P series and the M series lines. And the M series, those are really cheap TVs that look really good. If people remember back to when we had Rob H from AV Rant on, his suggestion was if you're looking for a new 4K TV and you don't want to spend a ton of money, get an M series Vizio because they're good TVs. Well, the only problem was that this year's model that had HDR support only supported Dolby Vision. If you remember, there's two competing formats. Our current format war is over HDR video, and that's between Dolby Vision and HDR 10. Well, this firmware update for these Vizio TVs now adds HDR 10 support to those TVs. Why is that important for our listeners? Because the Xbox One S supports HDR 10. So there you go. If you already have an M series TV or a P series TV from this year, and were bummed that an Xbox One S wasn't going to work for you, well, now it will, and you can rush out and get one. Well, I guess you can rush out on August 23rd and get one. Or if you had gotten one and were just hoping for the firmware update, well, there you go. Go and double check that your TV is set to automatically keep itself up to date. Let it install this update. Make sure that HDR is enabled and you're good to go with your Xbox One on your Vizio HDR TV.
Very cool.
All right. So actually, Richard, amazingly, we're already through the news for the week.
I know. Well, you know, we've had a couple really long episodes, so we're accommodating. We're trying to make up for that. This is going to be a shorter one. And, you know, we've been watching a bunch of stuff. Well, I have. I don't know about you. I've been watching the usual stuff. I haven't done anything in terms of hardware in my entertainment center over the last week. But I've been watching The Usuals, Tyrant, Big Brother, Justified. I've still been working my way through the last season of Eureka. Sports Night, I have been diligently watching an episode or two each night. I am almost through the second and last season. And because that show has reminded me how much I love the Aaron Sorkin walk and talk, I have binged on rewatching all of season one of The Newsroom in this last 1 week.
Now, that's only like 9 episodes. But that's
it's
still
a
10-episode
season. It's not a ton, but each episode is a full hour because it's on HBO, so there aren't commercial breaks. But it is so good, and I think I remember when I introduced this to you. I don't know if I introduced the show to you, but when I talked to you about watching The Newsroom, and what caught me was the opening scene of the series.
Yes, absolutely.
And I still believe that the opening 10 minutes of the series, I don't even think it's 10 minutes long, I think it's maybe 7 minutes long, is probably some of the best 7 minutes on television ever.
I really
like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I can't think of a show that has done a better job of telling you that quickly whether or not the show was for you.
Yep.
You know, I mean, so many times we talk about how, oh, give this show 4 or 5 episodes, or in some cases, give this show a season and then it gets good. No, from the very first second the newsroom is really, really good.
Yeah. And that opening, the only equivalent that I can think of, you know, you described it really well. It tells you right from the beginning that it is going to be good. The only equivalent that I can think of is the pre-titles sequence of The Lion King. Like, it totally sucks you in, and you're ending it, and you're like, wow, this is going to be awesome.
I don't remember the beginning of The Lion King.
Oh, shame on you. Go back and watch that. All right. In the meantime, I've been watching, and this is something I haven't even mentioned before, Hotel Hell, which is a hotel teardown show by Gordon Ramsay. So the same way that he goes in and he tears apart restaurants and helps them understand how to better manage the place, he does the same thing with hotels, predominantly with like small privately owned inns and places like that. They're on season two. It was originally on Fox. I don't even know where it has been showing because I'm just watching it on TiVo. But it's something that I actually enjoy for some reason. I don't watch cooking shows. I don't watch kitchen shows. It doesn't interest me. I am a hotel snob. Like when I go and I travel, every little thing about a hotel that isn't right drives me crazy. And you know this firsthand, Josh.
I do know this firsthand. I've traveled with Richard, and this is absolutely true.
So I totally appreciate the show. And of course, the Olympics are on, so I've been watching the Olympics. I'm tired of swimming. I want to see something else.
Okay. So I would recommend rugby, because it's hilarious.
All right, and so is that what you've been watching? What have you been watching?
I have been watching some Olympics. But first, I want to point out a podcast again. IGN, the primarily gaming news website, they have a whole bunch of podcasts. They have an Xbox podcast that you should probably listen to. But they also have one that has its most recent episode is of particular interest to fans of our show. The podcast series is called IGN Unfiltered, and it's a once a month podcast where the host sits down with someone big in typically in gaming and has a really insightful interview. And the most recent one was with Robbie Bach, which, Richard, I'm sure you remember who Robbie Bach is, and a lot of our listeners probably do too. He was there when the Xbox was first created. He was with Microsoft for years and years and years. Like, I think he was, I think he says in the show what number employee he was. It was pretty early on. And he retired from Microsoft 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So he wasn't there when the Xbox One launched, but he was there when the Xbox and the Xbox 360 launched. And he has got some awesome stories to tell about the launch and the build of the Xbox and the transition to the 360. And he's got some thoughts on the Xbox One, but he doesn't really want to, you know, he knows that him talking about the Xbox One is a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking, and he wasn't the one doing it. So he just kind of lets that sit. But there's a lot of really interesting history there for anyone who's a big fan of the Xbox. He also worked on Zune, I believe. So he was around for a lot of the stuff that we've talked about on the show for years. And it was a really, really interesting episode. So
cool.
Check out IGN Unfiltered. Now, I've also, like you, been watching the Olympics, and I've been doing it in a slightly different way. Richard, you've probably sat down on your couch and
yep.
tuned your TV tuner to NBC or to NBC yep. Sports or USA or any one of the 47 channels it seems that NBC owns. I wasn't really able to do that.
Why is that?
Well, while I was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan visiting some friends, these friends are true cord cutters, and the absolute like most extreme definition of cord cutters, they don't even have an antenna. The only way
that's not even a cord, come on.
It's a cord from the antenna to your TV. Instead, they only watch stuff through Netflix and Hulu on their Nintendo Wii. That's it.
Their Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, they're not big TV people. So they watch their DVDs and they've got Netflix and Hulu. So now I'm me, so I of course had my phone and a couple of tablets with me, and I used the NBC Sports app on my Windows tablets and logged into those and was able to watch some Olympics coverage that way, watch some soccer, put on some gymnastics for my daughter, who friggin' loves that stuff, and then just watched a few highlights and, you know, things like that throughout the weekend. And it worked really, really well. Now, I didn't spend a ton of time watching the Olympics over those few days, but enough. And I didn't spend a lot of time on Twitter either. But I did see one thing popping up over and over and over again on Twitter. And that was people whining about how is it that in the day and age of the DVR, NBC still finds it necessary to tape delay things.
Tape delay. Yep.
Well, yep. I've got a couple of reasons for you, people. Reason one.
You and I are going to disagree.
We might. Reason one. Yeah, a lot of people out there have DVRs, but we've seen the usage numbers. Most people don't use them. They're not sitting down to watch the Olympics at 5 o'clock p.m. So they're going to miss it if it's live. They're not going to, you know, they're not sitting down until prime time. It's called prime time for a reason. So they show the events that people most want to see at 8 p.m. because they're not going to watch it live, and they're not using their DVR for things anyway. And even if they were, frankly, the way that NBC and most of these TV carriers have always scheduled this stuff, it makes it difficult to DVR anyway. For example, my daughter, like I said, loves gymnastics. I wanted to record the women's gymnastics team final. Well, to do that, I had to record from 8 p.m. until 11:30 p.m., and it included like 2 hours of swimming in the middle. That's super annoying. Instead, what you could do is pull out that NBC Sports app, which is on your phone, it's on your PC, it's on your tablet, it's on your Xbox, it's probably on Apple TV, and they've got everything live. You can go to the specific sport that you want. You can get replays. If you missed it live, it's all there exactly how you actually want to watch it in a modern way.
So I don't know why I thought this, but I was under the impression, and maybe I misunderstood something that someone said on Twitter because I haven't tried it myself yet, but I was under the impression that the NBC app still had delays on some of the content, specifically anything that they were showing on primetime, they would not show live in the app.
Well, I know that that isn't the case with, or wasn't the case with, that women's gymnastics final. We were driving home, unfortunately, while it was happening. I got home like as they were handing out medals, because I got home, turned it on in hopes that I could just rewind the live feed. Unfortunately, you can't rewind the live stuff. You can rewind and fast forward the replays. I turned it on and it was there as the live women's gymnastics final. And that's what they showed at 8 p.m. in primetime last night. So if that's true, maybe it's not true for everything, but I would think that if it were going to be that way, it would absolutely be that way with women's gymnastics.
Yeah, I would think so. That's a big one.
Yeah. So stop your whining and pull out the NBC Sports app. It works really well.
I guess I don't get to whine if I don't really know firsthand. But I guess I'm kind of confused. Is there not, of all of their 37 stations that they have, or channels, or whatever that we call them now, do they not own one property where they are showing stuff live that might also appear in the primetime broadcast? Like, are they holding back everything that they're going to put in primetime so that you can't watch it live on any of their live channels? Because that's stupid.
That I don't know. I mean, they're showing tons of stuff live on all of their different channels. You know, like every U.S. women's soccer game has been live on TV, but those aren't in primetime. So that question I can't answer, because I think it seems like most of the sports that are really popular in America, so swimming, gymnastics, beach volleyball, that stuff has all been in the evening anyway.
Yeah. All right.
So I'm not really sure.
All right. Well, that is it, unless there's other stuff you've been watching.
No, that's it, because there's not a lot to watch when you're at a place that doesn't have TV signal.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you watched Orphan Black, the most recent season yet?
Nope.
Josh?
I haven't even finished the previous season.
Oh.
I barely got into the previous season.
Well, the last season was not as good as this most recent one, but you need to catch up.
Yeah, I do. That was season three?
Four. I believe that we're on now, or that we just ended, and you need to watch that before the Emmys.
Before the Emmys? When the heck are the Emmys? I don't pay attention to those stupid award shows.
It's in the fall. All right. That is going to be it for this episode, but we have a couple of announcements before we leave.
Indeed. So the day after we recorded last week's Entertainment 2.0, you and I, Richard, got together with Chris Barnes and Taylor Marr, two of our favorite podcasters on the planet, the guys who produce The End User, which I'm sure all of our listeners know The End User. Hopefully most of our listeners are also or were listeners of The End User, because unfortunately it's been a few months since those guys had recorded a podcast of The End User. But we all got together and talked about it and decided that while the show really was done, it would be better to actually do a finale episode, not just let it pod fade the way so many podcasts do. So that's what we did. Last week, the four of us got together, did one finale episode of The End User, and it was a lot of fun to be on. I thank Chris and Taylor for letting us be a part of that special episode. And I recommend everybody go out there at the DMZ and download the last episode of The End User.
Definitely check it out. It is episode number 204. It is called, conveniently enough, The End. And, you know, Josh, I kind of feel like we horned our way onto that show, but I'm glad we did.
Yeah, we kind of did. But just like you, I'm glad we did too.
Well, I also want to talk about two quick things. I have been wanting to propose a South by Southwest panel for years now, because I go to South by Southwest every year. And in the last 2 years, they've had a lot of panels and sessions about the connected home. So I have proposed a session called Don't Brick My Fridge, about the issues that people need to think about if you're a company and you're designing a product that depends on services that you're going to have to keep working for a while so that the product that you're selling doesn't become useless to your consumers. And as a consumer, what you can do to protect yourself in those areas. So that's something that I've proposed. And here's how this works. I proposed it and the advisory board will consider it, but the community has to vote on it. So for the month of August, people can go and vote on it, and we'll have a link in the show notes that you can follow, or you can go to panelpicker.southbysouthwestsxsw.com. And you need to have an account, but you can create one. It's easy. You can just sign in with Facebook, or you can create an account. You don't have to put a credit card or anything. You don't have to be attending South by Southwest, but you can still thumbs up my proposed panel if you think that this would be interesting to have at South by Southwest. I've also been asked to appear and co-host a talking session about the smart home called Meet the Smart Home, What the Jetsons Got Wrong. And I'm really looking forward to this. I think this is going to be a fun look at what the smart home is, how it was originally envisioned, and where we think it's going. So check that out, panelpicker.southbysouthwest.com. And again, we'll have links in the show notes so that you can go and please thumbs up our proposals.
That would be so cool if you got to host a session or two at South by Southwest.
I am really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, that's it for our announcements, and that means we're done with this show. So if you want to get a hold of us, there's a bunch of ways to do that. We're on Twitter. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/the DMZ. We're on Google+. We've got that email address we mentioned earlier that's way too long. entertainment20 at thedigitalmediazone.com. Or if you don't like long email addresses, just use the contact form on the website. We've also got Richard's other podcast for you to check out. It's called Home On, where they talk about home automation and control. Richard, what's the latest with Home On?
So we've talked about this episode for a while now. Chris Allen, the CEO of iDevices, this is the company known for the iGrill, which they have since sold to Weber. They've pivoted and they've focused on creating devices that are HomeKit compatible. Not just HomeKit compatible, but they're going to be compatible with Google Home. What? You say? That's not even out yet. So this, we had a great talk, and this is for real going to be in the feed by the time you listen to this, as long as you're not hearing us record live. So check that out, and I hope you enjoy it, and stick through to the end, because we have a special offer for a lot of our listeners. And I don't just mean a special offer. I mean, you're going to get something really cool for free.
Ooh, that's reason enough for I think most of you to listen. So definitely check that out. If you don't know where to find it, that's easy. You can find all of our shows pretty much everywhere you can find podcasts. iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. It's everywhere. If you're not subscribed yet, please go and subscribe to Entertainment 2.0. Go and subscribe to Home On. If you're doing it on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. That's awesome, and we love you for it. And then if you want to participate live, come and do that too. We record the show live, typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always that night. It's not always that time. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're doing it live, and you can chat along with us. That's going to do it for episode 378. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 379. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.